get the message. Send it out, oh Lord, it's there. None of us are free.
Top of the morning, top of the week. This is We Ourselves. I'm Ambrose Eileen, Sr. And, of course, that was none other than Ray Charles. Two great minds, inquiring minds, scientific minds, from two distant countries, England and America, have raised important questions about our government's official version about what really happened on 9/11 when airliners with passengers on board crashed into New York's Twin Towers. The important questions raised by then have led to many of us raising another important question, that is, was 9/11 the result of an inside job by our government or by someone connected to people at the highest levels inside our government? Over the past several months, I have been honored to have Dr. Judy Woods share with you her important scientific findings. Today, she is joined by that man from England, Andrew Johnson. And they're both in our studios to share his views as well. My plan is to make them available for your questions today and Friday. Welcome to Dr. Judy Woods and Andrew Johnson.
Hello, thanks for having us here.
Thank you, Ambrose, for having us. It's wonderful to be here.
Why in the world, Andrew, have you come all the way from England?
I have no idea. Somebody asked me to come here, and I looked at my diary, didn't have anything booked, looked at my bank account, had the money, so I thought, I'll ask my wife if I can come, and she said, yes, you can go, so I came.
All right. When did you start to get the fascination with what had happened to the Twin Towers, and how long have you hooked up with Dr. Judy Wood?
Yeah, the first time I really thought about the question was when I saw a video, and it showed that the towers came down very, very quickly, far more quickly than would be expected with what has been called a collapse. And I used that word for a long time, probably a couple of years, to describe, you know, how the towers actually were destroyed. But then I think it was in about September 2006, that sort of time, I was hearing about Dr. Judy Wood's research. And then, of course, as we know, and she'd been on We Ourselves, I think, six times now, she published this research that she'd been doing, which showed that it didn't actually look like a collapse. When you study the pictures in depth and look at all the other evidence associated with the videos that nearly everyone has seen at some point, there's a very great deal of other pictorial evidence that Judy has collected, And I believe at one point Judy has said she looked at thousands of pictures, and in the last sort of 2 or 3 months or so, something along those lines, we've been further studying the pictures that she's collected, and we've found in many cases, or she's found I should say, and I've kind of looked over her shoulder, so to speak, that she's picked out certain pictures and wondered what certain details, you know, were caused by. For example, I know that Judy has talked about the toasted cars, things like that, and that has caused a lot of controversy on the internet, and you know, there's been really a kind of a concerted effort, as far as we can observe, to stop people thinking about these very interesting details. And we've now sort of come to the point in the past few weeks where we think we've actually managed to work out what some of these issues mean in a wider context, and what the underlying technology behind these what's caused some of these details means. And it's actually, a lot of it is to do with energy. That's one of the key questions in all of this. I think really that's what I've actually come here today to talk about. And although I'd been asked to come here, it's actually worked out very well in terms of it's a good day to come on the program and explain our Judy's findings, really. And as I say, I've really sort of looked over her shoulder and sort of chatted through a few things with her, and that's why we're here. To sort of continue on that thread a little further, adding up these details, we believe that what we're seeing at the World Trade Center complex are the results of what's something that has been known to be called the Hutchison effect. And actually, the Hutchison effect is kind of a bit of a misnomer in some ways, because it's actually a collection of things that the Hutchison effect covers. And we've kind of gone through this Hutchison effect thing, which we'll talk a bit more about, and in a few minutes. And we've kind of tried to tie up basically the characteristics of the Hutchison effect, of which there are probably about 6 main ones, with the evidence that Judy has collected in the thousands and thousands of pictures that she's looked at from the various image databases that we've been pulling through, or she's been pulling through, and she's sent me some of the links, and I've been having a look at some of them. We've found that there's actually a very strong match between about 8 or 9 of the characteristics and this evidence. And again, it's very much to do with energy, and that's one of the key points I want to bring out here, is that 9/11 is very much to do with energy, as it is to do with the other topics which it's commonly associated with, and I think I mentioned that on one of the previous times that I was on. And I'd just also like to mention that this broadcast and the others which Judy and I have sort of spoken in are archived at www.weourselves.org, and I really encourage people to go onto there and access the audio files and download them, give them to your friends, and really, you know, we want people to look at this information, really get into it and see what they think. You know, we really want people to think for themselves. We've tried to think for ourselves in all of this, and we want everyone else to do that. And so I think, you know, I'm going to ask Judy now to sort of go through some of the things which we've been looking at. If Judy could sort of start off with some of the characteristics that we've been looking at.
Well, you can look at the new series that's just gone up. It's listed at the top of my webpage in the news section under today's show, or you can go to drjudywood.com/articles/JJ, and those are both capital letters. In looking at the comparison with the various phenomena, I've just been collecting data over the past year and a half or so, and have found these distinct characteristics, and I've given names to them, like fuming, toasted cars. This doesn't mean that they're hot. It just means they're toast. They're history. They've been totaled. And it's flipped cars. There's just a variety of different discrete phenomena that I've looked at. And then looking at various details of the Hutchison effect, it's striking the similarities. Well, for example, flipped cars at the WTC. These flipped cars are sitting next to trees that are fully covered with leaves.
That's right. And you know, when you see these pictures and you see these flipped cars, and I've seen these pictures probably for at least 6 months, and it's one of those things. There is a car that's upside down, and you just think, oh, well, it's such a large amount of devastation. It just happened because of that. But when you see a flipped car in between two unflipped cars, and then, as Judy has pointed out, some of the pictures have trees in the background with leaves on, and so if somebody wants to argue that it's a huge, you know, blast as the towers were coming down, or it was a huge controlled demolition explosion, or it was a huge thermite reaction, or, you know, something of that nature, then it doesn't really wash, because the leaves are on the trees and the other two cars are the right way up. So what can cause this? Did somebody come along with a crane and lift it up? Did a team of the FDNY personnel decide, oh, well, we need to flip this car upside down because, you know, we want to look at the bottom? You know, I mean, how do you explain something like that? And when Judy and I were going through this, and it was, you know, it's a little story of how we came onto this this Hutchison effect thing, but and I looked at this and I thought, goodness me, this is amazing. And what we actually think, although for some listeners it's going to be pretty hard to swallow, is we think this is what's called a levitation effect. And if I can just talk about that a little bit.
Yes, please do.
Yeah, you know, because you think, oh, come on, that's crazy. But what I immediately saw when we were discussing this with Judy, and it was the aha moment, was this tied up with the Hutchison effect, because John Hutchison, I'd known about him since about 1999, that sort of time. So I'd known about him for 8 years, and he's been doing these experiments with firing beams of energy at various bits of equipment. All you need to do is just go and Google this separately onto either YouTube or, you know, the Google search engine. You'll find hundreds of pages about the Hutchison effect. No N in the middle, by the way. And one of the effects that he observes when he fires these energy beams at these enclosures that he's built is things will levitate. And he's had a 70-pound cannonball levitate, you know, about 6 inches or a foot in the air. And then this is using 400 watts of power only, which is about the equivalent amount of energy to 4 light bulbs. So with that amount of energy, he's able to levitate a 70-pound or thereabouts cannonball. So, you know, when we see this idea of the flipped car being a side effect of some sort of levitation or anti-gravity effect, of course, is another name for it. We thought that was a pretty close match, even though a lot of people are going to say, oh, no, you know, that's just nonsense. You know, we can certainly understand anyone who says that. So you know, perhaps Judy can now outline some of the other effects that you know, we're talking about as well.
What I also notice is that where there's flipped cars, most of them have much less damage to them. They'll be upside down, but the underside looks like a car from the showroom floor. But the cars that are upright are just severely toasted. And I have not seen any upside-down cars with engine blocks missing.
And why did we latch on to that? I mean, you know, probably we'll explain that. The thing was that we found a report on the internet which discussed the Hutchison effect in quite a lot of detail, and it specifically said in this report that when John had beamed energy at these samples, he observed either lift or disruption. In other words, some of the samples would fall apart and break apart, or they would levitate and fly up in the air. So again, tying that up with some of the cars, it wasn't across the board with this, but we've got a few samples where, as Judy says, the cars are in good shape when they're upside down, and in much worse shape when they aren't upside down, almost as if the energy which is, you know, being transferred is either going into an anti-gravity effect, or it's going into a destruction, or a disruption effect.
But if you think about that, it's what is disruption? Like when we looked at the towers, it's another thing that was hitting me last summer when we were talking about steam explosions. Water, when it turns to steam, expands in a volume 1,600 times. So it really expands. And looking at the towers coming apart, like when the towers first start to go away, you have this huge just balloon of dust squirting out from all directions. And it sort of reminded me of water turning into steam. So how might you get a solid part of the building just suddenly expanding? And we talked also about molecular dissociation. So let's imagine that the molecules, instead of attracting to each other, suddenly, for whatever reason, repel each other. That is, in essence, like levitation. Instead of the whole car being repelling the ground, how about each little molecule repelling its adjacent molecule, so it would come apart?
I mean, it's almost kind of, one phrase that's come into my mind about that is kind of macro levitation and micro levitation, where macro levitation would be the whole car, for example, and the micro levitation would be at the very much smaller molecular level. And this whole idea of the molecules repelling each other, and another thing that Judy's put in this series is a link to something, an article which, we can give this a name because this has been discussed in some of the fringe science, and it's called the Casimir effect. And we believe that somebody has worked out how to switch on this, switch on and off this Casimir effect, which is apparently at a certain level of molecular structure, this Casimir force ends up being a repulsive force, but there are certain things in nature which cause it not to actually end up having a repulsive effect. The various sort of magnetic fields are in the atom, and this and the nuclear forces, the strong and weak nuclear force, that sort of thing. John has been playing around with this stuff, John Hutchison, and he's actually helped us quite a bit on this, we're very glad of that he's actually given us some sample pictures, and in fact that I can probably mention is one of the other effects we've seen with the fires. Perhaps Judy can mention the fires that John has sent us some pictures of.
This is a video that's also on this web series that has a metal boat, aluminum boat, with fires jumping all around on the ship hull. No smoke. It's this cold kind of fire like we see at the World Trade Center. There's a picture from the World Trade Center where you have metal on fire next to paper that's not burning, and the firefighters are just walking through it, their pant legs dragging right through it, like they're not afraid of it, as though the fire was painted into the picture.
Mm.
And that is very much like this video clip of the fire on the boat, the little toy boat, where the fire just runs around the boat, and it's, what's burning? Aluminum?
That's right. There's no other fuel for this fire to actually burn with in the demonstration that John sent us the video of. And the other interesting thing, if you watch this video that John sent us, we've got a link on the web pages that Judy gave the article for, gave the link for to the articles, and it's at www.drjudywood.com, and there's a link from the home page there. And one of the things that we noticed on this video is that the fires actually seem to be occurring sometimes when John has got his energy beam switched on. We can tell on this video when he switches the beams on and off, because the boat is in a little tank of water, and you can see the water droplets kind of shimmering in the video when he's got the energy switched on, and then the water will go, you know, calm when he switches the energy off. And even when the energy is switched off, we see these certain sections of the video, which is only about a minute and a half long or something, the fire actually appears even when the energy is switched off. And we've tried to, Judy's done a great job with tying up this with some of the witness testimony as well from the New York first responders, which we got off the New York Times website. One particular very interesting testimony that ties up very, very closely with this data, where he actually describes going back towards the fire truck, and the thing blows up, it's actually a very interesting testimony to read, because he also describes this force which lifts him, and then the force goes into his bag, but he doesn't actually describe the way that that force manifests itself in his bag.
He does imply that he doesn't want to touch it. It looks like it's been affected somehow, the stuff that was in his bag.
Yeah. Judy's put all this onto the web page, and I'd encourage everyone to go and have a read through it, and see what they think. And again, if I can mention a couple of the other characteristics, such as what John, I don't know if this is John's name or Judy's name, but the jellification, which is John has, one of the really strange things that John has repeatedly shown, he's got, I think, probably maybe 100 of these metal samples where bars are bent in half. You look at the samples that he's got, and there's some very weird melting effects. And Judy had managed to tie this up with some of the samples that NIST have of the steel beams, which are actually, Judy's got this great name for it, and she calls it the rolled up carpet. And you'll see that in the website. It literally does look like a steel beam, where you've got somebody's rolled up a whole roll of carpet, and then and then slung it over their shoulder, and it bent. You know how carpet bends when it's rolled, and the beam looks very much like this. And then that ties up very closely with one of John's steel samples, aluminium samples. But he's also seen effects on steel too. And that's what we've been trying to get from John, is some information about the various effects on the different types of metals, because we know that different types of metals were used in the construction of the World Trade Center, of course. Judy wanted to mention one of the other characteristics.
Yeah, these wheat checks that are rolled up, they're rolled around a vertical axis. If the building were collapsing, wouldn't they be bent around a horizontal axis?
Yeah.
And the big steel spandrels, it's rolled up, like a rolled up carpet. Another characteristic I noticed early on, I didn't know what it meant until now, was I call it the peeling effect. There were vehicles that looked like the door, through the split thickness, had peeled down. It was bizarre. It wasn't a burning, and these are not laminated metal doors. Why was it peeled to the mid plane of the door? I saw this in several cars. Well, I also found pictures of aluminum beams on John Hutchison's site that are split through the thickness. The aluminum just sort of explodes and peels apart in this exact same way.
Yeah, so, again, we're seeing a lot of these common...
You're saying this is coming from energy.
Yes, yeah.
Explain that to our listeners.
Well,
what kind of energy would produce these things?
Well, John, the best person to ask would be John Hutchison, and, I have to confess that I haven't studied the circuit diagrams for the equipment that he uses. Mm-hmm. Having said that, that information is available on his website, or some of it is. Just to try and answer that a little bit, he's basically using things like old radar equipment, and as you know, radar equipment sends out powerful radio signals, because they have to be very powerful, because of what's called the inverse square law, where if the radio signal is beamed out, it drops off at a distance proportional to the distance squared, but also the reflected signal coming back drops off to the distance of squared, so you've got a actually 4 power drop in the signal between what's sent out and what's received. So what that means is, I know it sounds like a bit of technical math, but that means that you've got to have quite a powerful emitting beam for a radar to work. And John's one of these guys who likes to go to naval and army surplus stores and buys this equipment, takes it back to his apartment, which if you go and see the pictures of his apartment on his blog and things, it's pretty amazing. It's like it's like NASA compressed into a sort of one bedroom apartment. It's amazing. And he will beam this radar energy at his samples, and then I think he uses it to other signal generators to mix in radio frequency signals from, I think, upwards of 10 hertz to up to a few gigahertz, I believe, and that's how he observed these effects. And initially he was only able to produce this effect about 10% of the time, but over time he got better at it.
I think it's close to, it's 100% of the time now.
Yeah. We have spoken with John quite a bit about this, and we initially thought he would be quite uncomfortable speaking to us, because this is what we've experienced in terms of, we've approached a few people and tried to say, would you try and comment on this or give us any feedback, and they've just sort of said, well, basically no, which has been a bit unfortunate, but this is the way that things go in this arena. So we think, what John has been doing is very important, and it's not only us that think it's important. A lot of people have been to see him. He's had people from the military industrial complex have actually been to his house and said, oh, this looks really interesting, John. Can we, take this back to the Pentagon? And John, being John, is a lovely guy. He said, yeah, of course you can. I think it's, you need to look at this, which is what they've apparently done. He's basically given us some information about who's been to see him, and it's actually very interesting. And again, I'd encourage people to go to the website and see who's actually mentioned there, because it does tie up with other aspects of the research and the dealings that Judy has been involved in over the last 12 months. There's a couple of names which really spring out. We actually have an audio broadcast which I actually had on my website from 2005 from a George Noory show, and John was talking about a particular set of people in this broadcast, and it was pretty amazing. We were pretty amazed by this. It was Judy sent me a note, and it's Art Bell, not George Noory, so I got that one wrong, even though it was on my own website. And there you go. We found a lot of kind of dots just jumping out and joining up. It's been pretty incredible. And we really feel now, I feel very, very strongly, that we're kind of reaching some kind of crunch point with this. Because I think when you look at these effects and you follow it through, one of the key things, I'm probably talking too much here, I should let Judy talk more, but one of the key things that we think this is related to is cold fusion, which I think we really wanted to get that in, and if Judy wants to talk to that a bit more, that would be absolutely great.
Yes, one thing I would like to point out, it isn't necessarily a huge amount of energy that must be put into the system, it's how the energy is used. And an analogy that we came up with, Andrew and I, in talking, is think of a bunch of structures. If you were asked to put each one of those 100 structures on their side, how much effort would that take? Now, how about if you have a needle on the end of a thread swinging, and you just tap the first one, and they all go down, like dominoes? That takes very little energy to put all of those structures on their side. And what this Hutchison effect apparently does is something very similar to that. It just starts off a reaction which then continues and takes off. So you don't need much energy, it's the type of energy. Kind of like exciting the natural frequency of a structure. My favorite one is the Tacoma Narrows Bridge. The wind excited the natural frequency, and the bridge self-destructed. pretty weird. And it's like a child on a swing set. If you just push a little bit just at the right point, you get a huge swing, and it keeps, you know, increasing. If you push at the wrong point in the swing, it decreases the effect. So it's how the energy is used. And if you can trigger something to release the energy from within or to change the structure, it might not take much energy at all. And one of the ways we know that not a lot of energy was put in on 9/11 was that the dust clouds were not hot. People were mowed down by the dust clouds. They ducked behind a car. Then they got up. We're fine. They didn't get cooked. We saw no cooked bodies after the dust cloud rolled through.
And again, you know, this Judy mentioned the lack of heat. Then, of course, well, we've already said cold fusion, which is the layman's term for what's been called low-energy nuclear reactions. And it's also been called chemically assisted nuclear reactions. And that's one of the key points. A lot of people, if you go on the internet, will talk about the nuke theory of the World Trade Center. And they'll say, oh, well, it was a nuclear explosion because, you know, people have very sadly ended up with cancer and, you know, it's a huge level of destruction. And Judy's talk, which we've also not now got on the internet, and you can find it on Google Video, called The New Hiroshima, that will, you know, go through a lot of this data, but it, before we actually latched onto the Hutchison effect, and before she'd latched onto that. But, so the cold fusion effect, where you're really exploiting the energy which is already within the atomic level. And to go back to the domino analogy that Judy mentioned, the way I kind of think of it is that if you take a piece of metal, a steel bar or an aluminium bar, at the atomic level, that's actually what's called a crystal lattice. And so the atoms in that metal are arranged in like a lattice, which is like a grid, sort of 3D grid structure. Now, something in nature has to use energy to arrange these atoms into a grid structure. And if you can find some property of physics to kind of break up that lattice structure and make it into a molecular, or an atomic rather, domino toppling effect, that's what we think is actually happening with this sort of destruction. It's at that sort of level, if I can explain it like that.
In September of 2005, the National Institute of Standards and Technology issued their final report. And I know that Judy and Dr. Morgan Reynolds have sued them because under the Data Quality Act, and said that they just got it wrong. What has happened with that suit?
Very good question. Through the Data Quality Act and the request for corrections, they have now answered my appeal as of 2 days ago.
Oh, is that right?
And it's interesting that it contradicts the previous one. The one that I had sent my appeal in August to, they said, oh, there was no conflict of interest with ARA. Yeah, okay, you have to prove to us that ARA really does manufacture directed energy weapons. And I had done that. Now they said, well, it doesn't matter because we specifically told ARA not to investigate what happened.
What?
It's crazy.
Willful negligence?
Willful blindness.
Willful blindness, yeah. That, you know, they've said earlier that there was no corroborating evidence for deliberate destruction of the towers. But here they're saying they specifically told their contractors not to investigate what happened.
That's amazing.
Yeah, absolutely, it is. I think one of the things I'll just mention is in relation to the legal cases, one of the names which came up, anyone can go onto the internet and find Dr. Woods and Dr. Maud Reynolds' legal cases. And one of the defendants that was listed in that case, well, it was probably, I think, started about last April, so we're talking, you know, 8-9 months ago. One of the names that's listed in the defendants actually came up in our research into the Hutchison effect, and so that really jumped out. And John confirmed to us that these guys were involved, and he even went as far as giving us the names of a couple of people who were involved. So we were thinking, this is just unbelievable.
It's interesting, the radio broadcast, the Art Bell one, that was a couple of months before the NIST report, final NIST report came out. I've got that audio clip on the top of that new series. And here, John is just talking about how it's weird. The past 10 months has been this flurry of activity. I've had folks from NASA contacting me, folks from the Pentagon, and folks from some company called SAIC, whatever that stands for. How interesting that just before the NIST report, the final report comes out, he has this flurry of contacts.
Absolutely, we've seen a few repeated themes of that, in the stuff that we've done. And, I think the key in all of this question is the energy. I've been saying to a few people that I've had a chance to speak to while I'm here, that we really now do stand at a juncture, and looking at what's happened at the World Trade Center, I think, is one of the huge keys to everything that's going on in the world right now. And this has been so much of a revelation to me over the last year, and particularly in the last few weeks. I'm thinking that a lot of the other global issues fade into insignificance because of the energy issue. We've essentially now, what I would like to steal a phrase from somebody who's across the room from me at the moment. We think that the destruction of the World Trade Center was the disclosure that almost infinite, almost free energy exists. And because of that, we've seen that technology has been taken up by some group of people somewhere. I don't know who they are, but they have taken that technology. People like John Hutchison are still doing parlor tricks with it, and will continue to do so, thankfully. And they've taken it and they've turned it into a weapon. So rather than using it to mitigate the effects of global warming, any issue, pick an issue, basically, they have turned it into a weapon, and they used it to create a fake war on terror. Those are the facts now as I see them. And I really challenge anybody to come up with some data which will refute these conclusions.
It's amazing with cars being burned, but there's almost no paper burn.
Yeah. That's right. I mean, that goes right back to the pictures of the fires. I mean, Judy's particularly picked out one on the website, which we've got one of the FDNY personnel. He's actually seems to be almost walking through this fire, It's bizarre, and
just dust and paper flowing.
Yeah. So again, what energy source did this? Well, we now think we know because John has given us all the pictures of the stuff that he's been doing. I think one of the other things we didn't mention that Judy's got a good study on is the rust, and this is something that John has seen with some of the stainless steel samples that he sent us. He's seen rusting. Which is, very unusual in the terms of the
stainless steel.
Yeah, rusting. With a very very short time scale, yet another characteristic that we've got there. And the other thing again, which you'll find on the web page, is the holes. John has got samples with bars, and he's fired the beams at these bars, and they've got a hole, a void, a hollowed out section in the middle of the bar. Judy's, very nicely put together that picture on the one side, and then a picture of World Trade Center Building 6, isn't it, on the other.
With voids, there's just nothing left in the building. There's just no material there.
Yeah. So again, that's another characteristic that seems to tie up quite well.
There's another one that I've become fascinated with is round holes in windows.
Round holes in windows?
Yeah, just somebody took a circular cutout of the window, and there's no other cracks much in it.
Mm-hmm. And I think the biggest thing that we've forgotten up to now, Judy, is one of the key factors that came up in this Hutchison effect report said that the effect wasn't always self-quenching. And what that means is,
if there's enough mass, too much mass of the object, they found it's not self-quenching. And you remember in October when I was up there, seeing the dirt getting moved in and out and still seeing the fuming puffs come out of the ground.
Right. What is the explanation for all that the dirt, the truckloads of dirt?
And it's interesting. I've got a section in this new series where you see that they've cut down to the old PATH train station that was built in the early 1900s, 1915, around there. And it's just all concrete. And then pretty soon you see they're hauling dirt out of there. This past November. Why the dirt arrived to have to be hauled out? They're not excavating down, because there's pictures where they're down lower busting up the concrete.
Yeah.
Dirt is used for cleaning up toxic spills, like when they cleaned up after Chernobyl.
Mm-hmm.
Bring in dirt, haul it out. Bring in new dirt, haul it out. And it also has become apparent that they are building a concrete vault around Ground Zero. It goes down almost 10 stories. How did they get rid of nuclear waste?
Yeah.
Concrete vaults.
And, you know, this whole idea, I think, that there's an ongoing reaction.
In other words, the effects of the technology don't always finish when you turn off the energy. The nuclear process, you know, this domino toppling effect.
And John has observed this as well with some of the samples that he's made. The domino toppling effect seems to go on after you switch the energy off. And we think this is what's happening at Ground Zero. The residual effects of the energy, you know, where the bits
of material continually breaking down at a molecular level, is still happening. And they're trying to kind of put the dirt in there to soak up the effects of this nuclear ongoing low-level nuclear reaction and taking it out.
In Bankers Trust, I'd like to mention, they had that gash in the front, which I believe was where it got infected.
This was a steel beam which was ejected from the World Trade Center. And
it looked like that, but I think that was just hanging in the gash that was from other reasons. But the picture I have of the snowball cloud, it rubbed down the front of that of Bankers Trust. And I think that's how it got infected. But in any case, they didn't realize the building was in that bad a shape. And they tried repairing it. And there's pictures I have on the site of Bankers Trust being repaired. They repaired that gash, put in new floors, and then they realized the problem is still continuing, and that's when they decided, I think it was in 2004,
they
needed to take the building apart. And it's been this horrendous series of fumbling and bumbling as to why the building is still not taken apart. I think it's because it's this huge problem. So they start taking it apart, and they get to that area that was repaired, and this huge rust in those beams adjacent to that area. I call it furry rust. It looks like it's been at the bottom of the ocean for 100 years, where adjacent beams do not look like that in other areas. So this is something that is continuing to come apart, and that causes me to look over at WTC-7. I believe they took down WTC-7 because they knew for sure that would be infected, and it would have this problem. They were hoping, I believe, that they could save Bankers Trust, that they wouldn't affect it, but they accidentally got it.
Yeah, and you know, we actually found, or Judy found, a forum where we've had the whole story of the Bankers Trust building has been posted over about a couple of year period, is it, or something? And this is on a forum called Wired New York. And we actually started to post a couple of things on there, and very quickly the discussion was kind of, you know, jumped upon, and it eventually shut down, or the thread was closed anyway. So, you know, but that forum was very useful for some of the pictures they posted, and we'd had some weird fire incidents, I think, or certainly one. It was two.
Last August, they had a fire one bumbling maneuver after another that was holding up the taking down of Bankers Trust. But last August, there was a fire there, here you have this gutted out building, open floors, and you have three firemen trapped. I think two were killed. But the pictures of the fire, it's the steel's on fire. This weird metal fire. Yeah, the steel structure's on fire.
That's what it looks like, yeah. It's a very, very strange fire. There doesn't seem to be... You know, it's like you're looking into... I thought initially it was a multi-story
car parking lot thing, you know, where there's obviously no windows and doors, because this building has no windows, there's no furniture. It's just it's essentially a framework, and you can see the fire is burning on the frame, and they've just got some wood sheets on there.
And the wood is not on fire.
Yeah, but the wood doesn't look as if it's burning. It's you know, again,
what?
If you... Yeah, it's really strange. If you look at it and just glance at it for a few seconds, you probably wouldn't see it. But if you spend, you know, 3 or 4 minutes studying it carefully, you can see that this fire doesn't seem to have an obvious cause. So, we're wondering if it's these ongoing effects of the material kind of breaking down and causing some type of, low-level nuclear reaction. And that's what's actually happening.
We originally thought that these were advanced microwave weapons.
The microwaves could be involved, as well as radio frequency waves. There's various frequencies. As I've said with my spectrum chart, I said, well, pick out what wavelength you want, or mix and match. And it could be just a variety of particular related frequencies that interact.
Yeah, and I mean, again, this exactly ties up with what we've seen from John. He sent us a number of pictures of the equipment that he uses. This has actually been something of a standing joke between Judy and myself about these pictures of equipment. But on a more serious note, we can actually see he has actually got some microwave, you know, it actually says on the front microwave generate, I think it might say microwave generate, we can see microwave energy on the front of this, picture of this equipment that he sent us. And then he's got another one where it's got a knob which is labelled in gigahertz, which again is some other type of generator. So, you know, we're seeing all kinds of data points tying up with this, so we're pretty sure that this is the real deal.
Let me tell our listeners, we're going to take your calls at 588-0893 or 202-588-0893, and you can talk with Andrew Johnson and Dr. Judy Wood. Let me ask you this. Now that they have finally responded to your appeal, the appeal that you and Dr. Woods and Dr. Morgan Reynolds have sued them about, what's the next step with that?
I filed a QTAM case last April, and it was unsealed September 12th this year, and that is moving forward. Morgan filed his in May, and they unsealed it in July, a lot sooner. So his is a little bit ahead of mine. It got ahead of mine there. And we're continuing with this. This is about the fraud.
Explain to our listeners what unsealed means.
Well, it had to be filed under seal, which means we can't tell anybody about it or talk about it. So it was filed last April, but nobody was allowed to know about it. And for mine, it was unsealed September 12th, which meant beginning that date, I could talk about it and we could notify the defendants about it and start preparing the case. Now, this is about the contractors for NIST having defrauded the American people. And if they were asked to, let's say half the budget went to filling coffee cups, you know, that's defrauding the government to use such expense to do nothing. If they were asked to find what was going on 9/11 or something even in the vicinity of it. For example, ARA, Applied Research Associates, they have a government contract where they are to know anything about everything to do with any weapon of mass destruction that exists or has ever existed on the planet. If they do know about every possible weapon of mass destruction and they look at the World Trade Center, that's willful blindness. To say, oh, the building just, you know, fell apart due to a trash can fire.
And you know, I know that Dr. Morgan Reynolds, they're working on another submission to kind of proceed to the next step. There have been a number of attempts to kind of basically dismiss the case, but that has just resulted in having to kind of tighten up a few of the bits of documentation, or rather add to the huge pile that we've already sort of collected, or you know, and that's also been an ongoing process which has been running in parallel, really, to the other research that we've been doing. So we've really been working hard at this to try and sort of take this forward.
What are the other physicists responding to this whole mess? How are they responding?
In physicists in general?
Yeah.
This is a problem. Folks, I think, might feel helpless, and so they want to keep their job, they have a family to support, so they're going to stick their head in the sand and hope somebody else fixes the problem, and this goes on and on across the board.
Mm-hmm.
What is just absolutely astounding is that if you look at Ground Zero on the late afternoon of 9/11, you look and you have a rubble pile that doesn't even reach one story high through the complex. You know, building that's 8 stories tall towers over the rubble pile.
Yeah.
These buildings used to be 110 stories that morning.
Yeah.
Where'd the material go? And why, after 6 years, we don't have more people asking that question?
I mean, again, we know we've had a couple of people. Recently we had a chap from Cambridge, Dr. Seffen. He came out with this paper which again said, oh yes, the collapse was perfectly normal and as expected, and I think that was what, about 6 months ago, was it, Judy, that
mm-hmm.
he'd come out with this. And also just recently, I think we'd given you word of this, Ambrose. We had a chap from the BBC tried to get in touch with Judy. And
I think
Frank had made you aware of
that.
And yeah, that was very interesting, because this
came around at a time when we were really trying to finalise, or Judy was trying to finalise, I should say, and again I was kind of looking over her shoulder, so to speak, these new pages which we'd been discussing. And this chap kind of appeared and said, oh, Dr. Wood, could I have an interview with you, please? And I recognised who this chap was, because he was responsible. He was the producer of a BBC Conspiracy Files programme, which was broadcast, I think, 16th of February last year. And this, was one of these documentaries that said, oh, Popular Mechanics, they're a good scientific establishment. They'll be able to disprove that the towers, collapsed in an unusual manner. And they went to the chap at Popular Mechanics and said, oh yes, Building 7 collapse was perfectly normal. It's what happens when buildings catch on fire. They completely turn to dust. And they collapse in 6 seconds. It's nothing to worry about, people. Nothing to see here. And so I basically was quite firm with this BBC chap. And I said to him, well, I really didn't like that documentary you produced, and here's the reasons why, and I listed a few of the reasons. And he sort of came back and just said, oh well, but I'd still like to speak to Judy Wood. And I said, well, how do we know that you're going to put this evidence in a fair light? He didn't really, unfortunately, have an answer for me.
He never addressed that.
No, he didn't say, well, this time it's going to be different. He didn't give me anything that suggested he was going to produce a fair and balanced documentary. I suggested to him that perhaps he could, for example, we've talked about the Keytam case, and I said, well, perhaps he could go to your news editors and say, well, Dr. Wood, Dr. Reynolds have these Keytam cases in the States, they're against the NIST body, you can go and look, they're filed with the courts, they're valid legal documents. Put those on the news bulletin, and if you can get those onto a news bulletin for us, then you're giving this matter some serious exposure, so we'll know that you're sincere. And he just basically came back and said, oh, no, I can't do that.
You know, so of course, I sent all this to Judy and said, well, you know, if you want to talk to him, you can talk to him. But I think kind of, you know, when she'd seen all this thread of correspondence, which went on over a period of a
couple of hours.
What really alerted me, the reason why I asked Andrew who this guy was from the BBC, is that he emailed me
and wanted to do the interview, like, you know, in the next hour or two. It reminded me of a used car salesman trying to close the deal before he realized that the car is a wreck. Or a bad lemon. It's like...
You want to rope him in before they can think about it. And that doesn't seem like a very good way to do a documentary.
Mm. Right.
You know, and
caller, you're going to be the only caller we're going to be able to take today.
Oh.
Okay.
This is matter to me. This is a revelation beyond revelations. I'm so happy that someone on the planet really understands that there's something very, very devious going on in this country with 9/11. This trumps everything, and I'm sure that a lot of FW listeners and people around the world instinctively know that there was something else going on, and it continues to go on. This hole in the window, these things that these experts are questioning are absolute necessities. I can't say enough for WPFW to have these people, these caliber of people on. It's wondrous. It's an absolute revelation. This trumps everything, and if this story ever gets out to the populace, heads will roll forever. This will change the course of the United States and possibly the whole world history.
Okay.
I'm to get out. Thank you very much. I can't
thank
say
you
enough.
So much. And then Friday you can come in and ask your questions. Dr. Woods, would you slowly give websites again so that they can look up this material, those who have never heard this before?
It's drjudywood.com. That's DrJudyWood, all one word, drjudywood.com. And at the top of that page, you'll see three rows of pictures. The third row is a double row that shows what happened at the WTC, and the other row is the Hutchison effect. You can click on any of those pictures, and it takes you to the series.
Excellent. Thank you, and thank you, Andrew, for coming here. And on Friday, we're going to follow up, and we're going to open the phone so that the listeners can ask you all the questions they must have by now. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much indeed. We're really grateful. Thank you so much, everyone, and to the caller who called in.
Yes, it's wonderful, and it's so heartwarming to know such listeners are out there.
Absolutely.
And that's going to do it for us for the day. You have a great week, and I'll see you on Friday. On Friday, come loaded with your questions. Take care now.
Thank you.
I got something I want to talk about. Y'all listen here. The time has come to air my feelings. Yeah. There's just so much confusion going down. I'm not the kind to be complaining. But sometimes you got to stand out from the crowd. Everyone got their own opinion.